Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. Goalkeepers are a little bit crazy. If you're not insane, why would you just stand there and let people run into you and shoot balls at your face? And all because you want to keep an inflatable ball out of a net. I play the position of goalie in soccer, and while I don't think goalies are totally insane, they are a pretty special group of players who face a crazy amount of pressure. They're on the spot throughout the game. If things work out, their team, the crowd, and commentators are happy. But if the ball ends up in the back of the net, there's a whole lot of analysis about what a goalkeeper should or shouldn't have done during the game. You heard things like, nothing the goalkeeper could do on that one, or the goalkeeper should have done better. Goalies need to have quick, analytical minds, and they need to work well under pressure, constantly calculating probabilities. They need to see the game evolving and read the intentions of other players, especially when they're taking penalty kicks. The goalkeeper's role in soccer has evolved a lot over the last couple of decades. In the early 1990s, goalkeepers were allowed to pick up back passes directly from defenders. All they had to do was save it and kick it long. These days, the ball is faster and moves more than it used to. Reflexes have always been important, but athleticism plays a much bigger role than it used to. Let's take a look at some goalie basics. Shot stopping is a goalkeeper's most basic role. Keeping the ball out of the net. Goalies have to practice their techniques, improve their power, speed, and diving ability, and learn where to position themselves to make saves. Then there's handling a shot. The keeper could save a shot and let the ball come back into play. That is called parrying the shot. The keeper could punch it away or catch it cleanly and hold it. You don't want to spill a shot back out into a place where strikers can get it. Hand size, strength, techniques, angles, how you manipulate the ball, all that matters. Then there's reflexes. Reacting in split seconds to block shots at close range. That's a skill where training really comes in. Some goalies work with colors, sharp movements, reaction lights, all kinds of balls being thrown at them very fast to develop their reflexes. Then there's aerial command, or dealing with aerial balls. It's one of the most challenging things about being a keeper. Timing, technique, mindset, decision making, confidence all come into play here. Tracking the trajectory of the ball and predicting where it's going to land. Then attacking the ball at the highest point and getting in front of the strikers. And then there's saving a penalty. Players strike the ball with lots of speed and accuracy during a penalty kick, so stopping the shot is no small task. Next, there's distribution, playing with their feet and attacking. Again, quick decisions and making the right call under pressure comes in. Throwing the ball and launching counterattacks with throws is important too. And then there's sweeping. Goalies are taking higher starting positions and are intercepting more. Controlling the space behind the defensive line by pushing up and staying as close to it as possible and actively participating in the team's play when they have the ball. Essentially being an outfield player. All this while flinging yourself, sometimes head first, at the opposing player's feet. At the same time, trying to make sure someone doesn't smash the ball in your face. That is pretty crazy. Our guest on today's show is Wallace Lapsley, goalkeeper for the Seattle Sounders. He's an Aggie and graduated from UC Davis in 2019 with a degree in global biology. Our place of the week is Seattle, where Wallace grew up and now plays soccer. The song up next is Wide Awake by Odessa featuring Charlie Houston.
We make a mistake. It's more than I can take. I'm feeling too fine. Something about you.
that I could put these feelings aside. Something in my system's faded, making me feel so lost on my mind.
You're listening to Time Out Radio on 95.7 KDRT. Wallace Lapsley was born and raised in Seattle. He played collegiately at UC Davis, where he studied global disease biology and Chicanx studies, and was an academic All-American and MLS Combine participant. He was then drafted by the New York Red Bulls and played with them for a year. Wallace then played for FC Tucson, currently plays for the Seattle Sounders, and joins us now on Time Out Radio. Welcome to the show, Wallace. How are you doing?
Thanks, Rohan. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So first off, how old were you when you started playing soccer?
I was pretty little. I think my first sort of soccer experiences were kind of like just like rec soccer. So just playing 3-on-3 with flags as goals and stuff like that. So I was probably 6 or 7 when I first got into the game.
Yeah. And tell us how you got into being specifically a goalkeeper.
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting story in my case. So I kind of started off playing in the field like everybody else and was sort of trying a bunch of different positions. But when I was in 6th grade, my family moved to Mexico. So we moved to a town called San Cristobal de las Casas, which is in Chiapas. So the southernmost state in Mexico. So right by the border with Guatemala. And when we moved there, I knew that I wanted to play soccer because obviously soccer is super popular there. It's everybody plays, everybody likes it. So I was just walking around the park with my dad, trying to find a team to play with. And just coincidentally, the only soccer shirt that I had was an Osvaldo Sanchez goalkeeper jersey. And Osvaldo at the time was Mexican national team goalkeeper, super popular and well-known player. So I had the goalkeeper jersey on, and then I was pretty tall for my age. So then when I found a team to play, they were like, portero. So ever since then, I've kind of just played in goal.
Wow. So what do you like most about being a goalie?
I think it's a cool position because there's a lot of like visibility and pressure. Now, sometimes those things can make it kind of a hard position, right? Because if you make a mistake or something doesn't go quite right, everybody sees it. But I really like that aspect of it because it kind of holds you to a high standard to perform at your best. But I also think it's a fun position to play because it could be kind of selfless in the sense that you're doing a lot of things to help the team be successful and help the team to win, but you're not necessarily on the finishing end of crosses or scoring goals and stuff like that. So it can kind of go both ways, right? Where you can get the notoriety for doing things well or get the notoriety for doing things badly. I kind of try and just find the middle ground where I'm not too busy, just helping the guys in front of me and stuff like that and helping the team be successful.
Yeah, and you're a podcast host yourself. You are the host of The Separation is in the Preparation, which highlights all the hard work and attention to detail that people put into preparing for success. So what is a typical day like for you on the soccer training ground?
For me, I like to get into the facility on the earlier side. So I'll probably get in around 8:15 or 8:30. And then leading up to practice, I have some stuff that I do with our athletic trainer beforehand, some kind of soft tissue stuff, some mobilization stuff. And then I have some exercises and things that I like to do beforehand to get my body ready to play. And then usually we'll start around 10 or 10:30, depending on whether we have a meeting or not beforehand. And then obviously, depending on where we are in the week in terms of preparation for the match, that'll kind of dictate the topics we cover in the session and then the length of the session. And then afterwards, I usually like to do sort of a different little set of exercises that I found that help my body feel good for the next day. So I do kind of do this recovery exercises as part of my routine. And then they have lunch for us there. So that's one of the best parts is after everybody's done with practice, we all sit down and have lunch together and hang out. That's kind of a broad look at what a day in the life is like.
Yeah. And let's talk about, you know, how you got to the Seattle Sounders. What was it like specifically to be, you know, drafted in the MLS? What was that feeling like when you first found out you were going to go to, you know, the highest league, a soccer league in America?
Yeah, it was really, really exciting. I mean, for me, when I was in high school, wasn't sure if I was going to be able to keep playing soccer in college, and actually came to UC Davis as a walk-on. And it was the only place that offered me a chance to continue playing soccer. My mentality then and my mentality now is just to be able to play the game for as long as I can. So when I got to my end of my career at UC Davis and there was an opportunity to continue playing as a professional, I had to take it. And that's my sort of mentality now. It's such a great way to spend every day and like have that as your job, is to literally playing a game. So I'm a big proponent of putting things into perspective as much as possible, and also just trying to enjoy it and stuff like that, because I think, at least in my opinion, the players who are able to enjoy it and to truly have fun every day, like those guys are able to persist over a long time. Because if you don't, the game can kind of chew you up and spit you out, and you know, you can start to treat it like a job or a business, and there's hard aspects of it for sure, and those can become overwhelming. So yeah, I mean, I just try and enjoy it as much as possible. Feel super, super lucky. It's something that I don't know, I always wanted to be a professional athlete when I was a kid growing up, so to be able to do that now is pretty great.
Yeah, and training to be a goalkeeper is obviously very different to, you know, a field player. So what specifically is different in terms of when you go to practice, how you train versus your field teammates?
I think the training environment is one of the really cool parts about being a goalkeeper, in that we obviously a very specialized position. So we spend a lot of time in a small group. So that group kind of consists of the goalkeepers and then the goalkeeper coach. I think that environment, cultivating that the right way, is really important for everybody to have success. Typically, most teams have 3 or 4 goalkeepers in training, depending on what they want to do, plus the goalkeeper coach. And then we'll run through sort of a gamut of different exercises and topics. So maybe as we get closer to the game, we're focusing on topics that are more specific to the opponent in terms of things that they try to do or have done in the past. And then also sort of mixing in over the week topics that each individual goalkeeper wants to improve on or needs to improve on, just for the interest of growing their own game and becoming the best player that they can be.
Yeah. And what's an aspect of being a goalkeeper that most people don't talk a lot about?
I think like just the kind of the mental sort of strength of it. I mean, for sure, I think people understand that it's a bit of an isolated position, but I think the challenge that it poses mentally and physically, the kind of the intersection of those two, is something that isn't acknowledged and respected enough. Because I think goalkeeper can be really, really busy, and you can get into a rhythm of the game like that, and things can kind of sort of slow down for you that way. But I think the best goalkeepers are the ones who are able to be kind of not standing still the whole game, but not being super involved in the play, but then having to get called into action in the 90th minute or whatever to make a key intervention or make a big save to get their team some points. So the ability to kind of maintain focus and keep yourself in a position physically where you can execute the action that's needed at kind of any given time, regardless of whether you've been super, super busy throughout the game or haven't had to do much. I think that's a big challenge. And I always have a ton of respect for the goalkeepers who are able to perform and execute in those moments, because it's certainly difficult.
Yeah, and what qualities are necessary to make the jump from being an amateur or playing in high school or college to becoming a professional goalkeeper?
For sure, you have to have a desire to do it. I mean, I've played with a lot of players over the course of my life in high school and college, even professional, who were more talented than I am. But for whatever reason, they didn't have the same sort of drive or passion for things that I did. So you have to want it, first of all. And I think there's an important distinction between like saying that you want to do something and then actually wanting to do something. So I had somebody give me great advice, which is if somebody were to look at your daily schedule every day, they should be able to tell pretty quickly after looking at that schedule what things are most important to you. When I heard that I was in college at the time, like soccer was really important to me. My schoolwork was really important to me. My family was really important to me. So I wanted to make sure that every day I was doing things and putting together my schedule in a way that somebody who didn't know me could see the things that I'm doing and know right away that, okay, this guy is really dedicated to his schoolwork. He's making time to speak to his family, even though they live far away. And he's always working to try to become the best player that he can because he wants to keep playing. And I think going back to something that I said before, like enjoying it, truly loving it. I mean, I think there's a lot of players who are talented enough to just go in and utilize that every day and to persist, but those guys are pretty rare. So I think for me, my ability to persist so far in the professional ranks has been largely dictated on just like enjoying it and bringing positive energy, because I think not only does that help me, it also can be contagious in a good way to my teammates around me. And so, yeah, those are, I think, some attributes that are important.
Yeah. And for goalkeepers in youth soccer, what signs can indicate that a specific player may have a high potential?
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, it has to be a desire to play the position, right? Like a lot of people get thrown in goal because nobody else wants to play. And like, if you don't really want to be in there, I mean, you yourself, Rohan, are a goalkeeper. So you for sure know, like you have to want to be in there to be successful. Yeah. So that's the first and foremost thing. I think like mentally just having a thick skin, being able to like make mistakes and being okay with everybody seeing the mistake, but then still being able to persist and move on and come back the next game or the next day at practice and perform like nothing bad happened the day before. That's important. I was and still am now a big proponent of playing a lot of sports when you're younger, because I think being in different team environments, different motor skills, developing different ideas and stuff like that, it's really important, especially for goalkeepers, such a hand-eye coordination sport, like playing volleyball, basketball, baseball. Like those are all things that I played a lot growing up. And some of those movements, especially in basketball, are pretty transferable over to playing goalkeeper. But first and foremost, it's just a mental position. So if you can find somebody at an early age who's willing to take kind of the mental battery that sometimes occurs and they still have a desire to do it afterwards, then I think that is a pretty good indicator, at least at a young age, that somebody might be good.
Yeah. And obviously staying healthy is very important for professional athletes. So what are some lifestyle habits that you've developed yourself to make sure that you're in your highest condition that you want to be?
I think for me, a big thing I think about is like my diet. I've always, even since college, like been a pretty healthy eater, but I switched a year and a half ago to just only eating to a totally plant-based or vegan diet. And for me, that's been really, really good. I don't necessarily think that you have to be a vegan or plant-based to have proper professional nutrition, but for me, it's been good. I think being super conscious and thoughtful about the things that you're putting into your body as fuel, both in terms of getting yourself ready to play and then also recovering is important. Another big one that gets talked about a lot, but I don't think executed at the highest level possible is sleeping. So I think making sure you're getting enough rest every day, really for anybody. I think sleep is the only performance enhancing drug that you can never test positive for. So I think everybody needs to sleep, and almost nobody is getting like enough sleep as they need. For me, I am like in bed by 9 o'clock every day, and I don't look at my phone after 8 o'clock. And even though like sometimes I'll be like missing text messages or stuff like that, I'll just respond to it in the morning. It's not a big deal. But for me, that's been an important thing, sort of setting boundaries like that and having good sleep hygiene to help make sure I'm getting the most rest that I possibly can. And then I guess like for me, like mentally, I found a lot of really positive things out of some meditation and mindfulness. So my sort of relationship with that and kind of meditation practice has grown over the course of my professional career as I figured out sort of what things work well and things like that. Being able to take a different perspective and take a step back and sort of look at things in a different way through meditation has been helpful in terms of like having good mental endurance. And I think meditation and mindfulness, like I said, have been key for me in being able to do that.
Yeah. And my last one for you, one of your hobbies is reading. And I heard that if you hadn't become a professional soccer player, that you likely would have been a librarian. And summer break obviously is coming up. So what book would you recommend that is a must read?
There's a book called The Library Book by Susan Orlean, which is a really cool book. It's a history of libraries. But then at the same time, she kind of tells a story of a really big fire at the Los Angeles Public Library in downtown Los Angeles in the 1940s. That's kind of like a mystery as to how it was started. So it's kind of an equal parts sort of a history and study of libraries and how they developed in the United States, but then also kind of a cool sort of narrative of this sort of pretty big historic event that kind of has been unsolved to this day. So I like The Library Book by Susan Orlean. Let's see, another one that I would recommend for anybody who's like into like kind of thinking about sports or just sort of the mental side of things. There's The Inner Game of Tennis by Tim Galloway. It's obviously tennis focused, but the concepts are applicable to any sort of athletic endeavor or really anything you're working on in your life. That's a super short one, but super good one. So,
all right. Well, I'll check those out this summer. Thank you so much, Wallace, for joining me on Time Out Radio. Good luck for the rest of this season with Seattle Sounders and the rest of your career.
Thanks so much, Rohan. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, that's Wallace Lapsley from the Seattle Sounders. Was Taking Over the Sun by Goth Babe. In today's travel segment, we visit Seattle. The city's name comes from Chief Seath, who was the leader of the Suquamish Native American tribe that lived in the area when settlers arrived in the area in 1851. Seattle is about 100 miles south of the U.S.-Canadian border in the state of Washington. Gold was discovered in Canada's Klondike region in 1896. This started the Klondike Gold Rush, and Seattle was a hub from where gold prospectors began their journey north. I visited Seattle a couple of years ago, and the first place I went to check out was the Space Needle's observation deck with its revolving glass floor. I was 500 feet above the ground, And while this might not sound like the best place to be during an earthquake or storm, the Space Needle actually has a foundation that goes 30 feet underground. So the structure can withstand a 9.1 magnitude earthquake and up to 200 miles per hour winds. Then I headed over to Pike Place Market, which I read was started due to overpriced onions back in 1907. Because of rising costs, the city opened a public market where farmers could directly sell their products for a lower price. It's one of the oldest continuously operated public farmers markets in the United States. There you can buy fresh produce, fish, flowers, crafts, and even comic books. Once you've had your fill of great produce and food, you can head to the water. Seattle has 200 miles of freshwater and saltwater shoreline, which makes it a great place for boating, kayaking, canoeing, or stand-up paddleboarding. The city also has the largest houseboat population in the world. The world's first floating bridge, the Mercer Island Floating Bridge, and the world's longest floating bridge, the Evergreen Point Floating Bridge. Some of Seattle's professional sports teams are the Seahawks of the NFL, the Mariners of the MLB, the Storm of the WNBA, and the Sounders FC of the MLS. Seattle is also home to the first 24/7 radio station in the U.S., KEXP-FM. Many people associate Seattle with rain. All its precipitation did, after all, earn the city its nickname of Emerald City because it's green and lush all year round. But you may be surprised to know that it really doesn't rain all that much in Seattle. Seattle only gets about 37 inches of rain a year. Most of its precipitation there is drizzle and light rain, which happens about 150 days a year. But it sort of rains cats and dogs in Seattle. For our four-legged listeners, did you know that according to the census, Seattle has more dogs and cats than children? Seattle's residents include about 110,000 children, 150,000 dogs, and 190,000 cats. So that wraps up our journey to our place of the week, the city of Seattle. Alright, let's call a timeout for Timeout Radio. This was your host, Rohan Bakshi. You're listening to Cater 95.7 FM, where the grassroots grow. Have a great day, everyone.